Like to call to order the February 3rd, 2014 meeting of the Sylvania City Council Economic Development Subcommittee at 6:30, and we are here tonight to talk about downtown parking. Present tonight are members of Council Lukey, Brown, Capellini, Hussman, Milner, Hainem, and Westfall, Mayor Stow, city staff members Mike Tansley, Joe Shaw, Chief Rodas, I think I saw Kevin Aller in the vicinity, our reporter from The Blade, and I believe that's about it. Oh, and Bill Sanford and Leslie Brining. I can't see out of the back of my head. What I'd like to suggest to the committee is a process that is that starts tonight, but might take a couple of meetings to conclude, only because this is fairly complex. We only have an hour tonight, and it strikes me that it's going to take us that long to sort of develop where the committee and where council is on the matter of downtown parking. So what we've done tonight with the help of Mr. Sanford is basically provide a briefing and an update to council on our parking situation. I think some members of council, Sandy, I believe, was not here in 2008 when we did our parking study. And so I think that history is important tonight. In addition to that, there's some legal issues that a few of them kind of came up when we were dealing with the purchase of the Laros property recently, but we really didn't have a full explanation of the ownership and the agreements that are surrounding the parking lot here on the west side of Main Street, and certainly some issues, I suspect, on the west side as well. So we've asked Leslie to give us a briefing on that. And then Bill Sanford has spent quite a bit of time talking with residents and particularly business owners in the downtown area to get sort of an unofficial bit of context for us. What are they thinking? What are the issues that are on the minds of some of our citizens? And I don't think it's fair to ask any of these folks to give conclusions tonight or make recommendations. But what I would like to do is then have a second meeting in fairly short order to have the committee and whatever staff wants to join in talk a little bit about what our recommendations need to be, if at all, and then perhaps come back for a third meeting where we have a public session, talk about those recommendations, and get input from the community. So I'm willing to move off of that, but it just seems like a more efficient way to deal with it in over a period of time. If that's fine, I'd like to start by asking Leslie to talk about the legal piece and kind of give us a context for where we are with our various parking properties.
Okay, sounds good. I put in the council packet a pretty thick handout of that kind of gives copies of the former parking studies that were done and the deed and a resolution from 1991 that kind of outlines how the different parcels were acquired. But since we have all that, if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them, but I will just keep my part short. The most important thing is when the city acquired the property for this lot, the Becker Place lot, it was in 1954, and there were two deed restrictions. The first is if the property has to be maintained as a free parking lot for not less than 10 years, and thereafter, you can't charge anything for parking here that we don't charge for parking on Main between Maplewood and Monroe. And the second one, the second restriction requires the parking that the property be used for parking lot purposes, and this is interesting, until 60% or more of the then businessmen doing businesses in the village of Sylvania within 1,000 feet petition us to change the use. So really the first one is the one we need to be concerned about, but there are two in the deed. So those are the two deed restrictions for that property. I don't know if anybody has any questions about the other history that I included. Happy to.
Okay. So fundamentally, any changes that we make we can make legally out of this.
Absolutely. The only thing that we would have to be cognizant of is we put, for instance, if we put meters in this lot, if that's a consideration, we would have to put them on Main Street as well.
Or change the restriction.
Right, right. And as an entity that has eminent domain authority, I think we can.
That's something we could do.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
All right.
Any other questions for Leslie? Then, sort of the.
And I don't mean, you know, I was maybe a little flip about that. This was given to us in 1954. That was 60 years ago. You know, deed restrictions of that age are frequently modified through judicial action and other activities, because the deed restrictions that are put in place, particularly of this set of, in this nature, do wear out over time. So I don't mean to be flip, you know, in terms of that we don't take these things seriously. But as our use and needs of the community change, it's appropriate to revisit those. Particularly, this isn't 3 or 4 years down the road. We are, you know, we're 3 generations
right
down the road from when this was put into place.
Well, I think you make a good point, which is the council has some latitude in modifying some of the legal constraints that we may have.
And we do have eminent domain authority, and again, this is not a new thought. It came up in 1987 when they were thinking of what to do with this building and the expansion of the court and the administration building, and it was discussed back then, and then, but they just decided not to do that.
Correct.
And the footprint of this building.
Right. Okay. Why don't we ask Cheryl Zulig from Smith Group, JJR, did I get that right? To give us a little bit of a walk down memory lane in terms of the 2008 traffic or parking study. And I guess I've asked her as well to talk a little bit about how the science of parking might have changed since 2008, and maybe some lessons that she might be able to share with us about what other communities are doing with similar situations. I think Bill Sanford probably briefed Cheryl about the kind of the recent history here, and I'm pretty confident she's going to be able to focus her comments on that a little bit. So Cheryl, it's good to see you again.
Well, it's great to be back. I'm thrilled to see everybody. Everyone's looking really good. I'll tell you, there's 2 reasons why. Do you have one already?
I don't.
Okay.
If you need it.
No, I have one.
Okay.
I have one. You know, to be talking about parking, I think is a really very optimistic thing, because Mayor and I were talking just briefly that the economy is starting to pick up. We're starting to notice it a little bit up in Michigan. And I think talking about parking and some of the parking pressures is really actually a kind of good thing to be talking about. It kind of says some things are happening. The other reason why I'm glad to be here is because I like working with you guys. So it's been super fun. And so I'm happy to be back down here. I'm just going to talk a little bit about a refresher on the study 2008, so just quick go over that. Talk about, now, Mark mentioned it as being the science of parking. I call it more the psychology of parking. It's a little bit not quite as proven in a lot of cases. And then I do have a couple of examples, and then kind of hit on some short-term, mid-term, long-term recommendations, not for you to make any decisions on, but just really to just throw up on the dartboard and to get your reaction to, and they are in keeping, we try to have them be keeping with what the 2008 study was. So I actually have a little outline here that I gave you with a paper clip, and then some resources related to the conversation that we're going to have today. And then please ask me any questions. I'll have time afterwards, I guess, to answer questions to the best of my ability. So most of you, I see some of you going through this, so that's great. Just as a reminder, this, we studied parking, public and private parking. Okay, so not just publicly owned facilities, but both. in the six-block district of the CBD. So what we were calling the northwest is Erie down to Maplewood, northeast is Erie down to Maplewood, the two central districts and the two south districts. Because it was focused on the CBD, it did not include the block, the courthouse, City Hall block.
Cheryl, did it include the lot immediately to the east of the court building? On the other side of the railroad track?
This one?
Yeah.
It did not. It included, it went to the railroad tracks. And Bill and I were like, geez, why didn't that happen at the time? It's because it was literally the limits of the central business district that the focus of the study was at that time. Now, obviously, the other parking resources adjacent to it are relevant. Okay, so at the time, what did we find? We found that the capacity, there were 1,400 spaces essentially in those six blocks, and at the time, the capacity was satisfactory. Now, the parking was meeting the needs. There was a deficit in a particular lot, and no one would be surprised when to know that, I think you guys call it the municipal lot, right? I've been calling it the West Lot, but there was about 100 parking space deficit in the municipal lot. But when you look at all six blocks aggregated, there was about 140 excess spaces, theoretical excess spaces during that period of time. The experience, again, from the study that, and from stakeholder and business folks, that the parking lots were difficult to find, so they were kind of tucked away and hard to find. There was limited lighting and landscaping, and some of the maintenance diminished the visitor's experience, so just kind of overarching challenges. And there was also, there's very little shared out. Those 1,400 parking spaces, very few of those parking spaces are shared, meaning they're not used by more than one business or necessarily by more than one type of person, type of user, with the exception, of course, of the municipal lot. And then what's largely functioning as a municipal lot, which is on the east side in the central district, it's a private lot, but folks are using it to access Main Street. So the finding really was, okay, there's enough parking now, but as we continue to grow, there's not going to be enough parking. It's kind of how it boiled down. And in order to understand what you needed for the future, we looked at some growth scenarios. You guys probably remember. So we looked at modest growth, which was a scenario A that said, let's kind of lease up the spaces that we have, and things are booming in the downtown, but not a lot of new building. And then we looked at the other end of the spectrum, which was substantial growth, a lot more square footage being built in all six blocks. And a result of that was, what did we think was likely? Well, the result was, yeah, we could see some modest growth happening early on. Would it ever hit to, 300,000 more square feet of building? Maybe in the future, but, that's so far away that let's have a plan that takes us there incrementally, so that we can start with addressing the modest growth and then work our way into a long-term response, parking response. So based on that kind of approach, the parking capacity was intended to increase from the 1,400 that it has right now over a long period of time into the long term to 2,400 parking spaces. The idea was, again, to do this in a phased manner, like we were talking about, as growth continues, so you're not putting more parking in, you're not investing in parking before you need it. And the idea is to try to locate parking within the actual block that you're serving, in terms of the two north blocks and the two south blocks, with the exception of the two central blocks, because of their location, we should try to focus them on being as shared and using shared parking strategies in those two central blocks as much as possible. There were intent to have lots consolidated into shared parking, as I said, and consolidated means, again, not in these central areas, but as you know, land use patterns to the north and to the south was build a parking lot for each individual site or building as it was developed. And so that's the kind of pattern that you see there, and there's a lot of inefficiencies in that. So as things develop, look at sharing parking lots, sharing uses, and you get more efficiencies. And so you can take that same area and actually get more parking spaces out of it. So that was one of the kind of ideas that came out of that study. There is a full list, I think back on page 17, of the specific long-term, short-term and long-term recommendations. And the good thing is you did the first one, so that's excellent. Great finding. So, we're on our way. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about, anybody have any questions just about that kind of the 2008 report? Okay. Walkability. So there's this thing called the 5-minute rule or the 5-minute walking radius. Is anybody familiar with that 5-minute walking radius? Raise your hand. No?
Tell us.
No? Okay. It's this kind of rule of thumb. And it, I actually have, so the first, your first handout is called Walking and Cycling Head Shed Analysis. And this rule of thumb suggests that people are willing to walk 5 minutes. And 5 minutes to go somewhere, okay? 5 minutes equates to about 1,300 feet, generally. Now, this is just a point of reference, and it's not science related to the five minutes. This circle right here, I was going to draw 1,300 feet on the downtown, but 1,300 feet takes us beyond Erie Street, over to the high school, past the river, and pretty far over here. So that wasn't really relevant, so I wanted to just show you what half of that would be, or a 2.5-minute walk. So if you were, you know, going as the crow flies, this is about 660 feet, and it captures all the way to the creek, again down to the river, over to the courthouse, and halfway up the block. That's about a 2.5-minute walk directly. Okay. Everybody knows you can't walk directly through there, so you want to look at some other, for example, if you're standing in the middle of the main street and you want to walk over to the courthouse, if you came up to Maplewood and came down and came like that, that's 1,000 feet, okay? So the 5-minute walking radius is something that we use to just try to understand, not just from parking standpoint, but how just a convenience standpoint. One of the things that we're getting smarter about the 5-minute walking radius, realizing that that doesn't always really hold true. And I included in your packet something called Walk Appeal. This is the pedestrian experience. And this is acknowledging that it's not just about how physically far you can walk, but it's about the experience along the way. And the better the experience is, the more you're going to walk. And so this is essentially taking multiple different categories. It starts with a big city like London. It says, in a really cool big city, I can walk 2 miles because things are happening, and that's just the way. And it's not because the streets have perfect sidewalks. You know, they might have cobbles. They might not be barrier-free. It's because there's great walk appeal, because there's things to do there. There's a lot of shops. Buildings are right up the street. So that's kind of the largest. That takes that quarter mile and says, you know, that's in these really good environments. That's nothing. You can walk way further. The second category in this is the Main Street Standard. And this is what I would equate to Main Street downtown Sylvania. They're suggesting 3/4 mile. Again, you have narrow storefronts. You have things happening. So you're walking by and you have interest as you're walking down. So you can go through, it goes Main Street, Neighborhood Street, Suburban Street, goes to the second page, the Power Center Standard. This is your, you know, kind of strip mall kind of experience. And this is 100 feet. If you're at Michael's and you want to go over to Farmer Jack's, if they were still in business, you know, you wouldn't walk more than 100 feet before you got in your car and moved your car and got... because the walking experience in that parking lot is horrible. There's just nothing attractive about it, and you would rather walk to the car than try to walk to the car. So walk appeal and experience of your downtown is very important to how far people are willing to walk. This may be all super obvious to you guys, but it's kind of, it helps us understand what we would expect for people with temporary labor law.
Cheryl, I don't know if this is an urban legend or not, but I thought I'd heard at some point that visible, having the destination be visible is a factor. Is that right? So if you're walking to a restaurant that you really want to go to, you walk further?
It is true, and that's true with parking as well, or getting a hint that the parking is visible, or getting direction that the parking is visible. Or having parking that's full and then parking next to it, so you can keep going and you can keep looking for parking, you know, so that there's some kind of something that makes sense related to that. So yeah, that makes how many roads you have to cross impacts how far, so that's kind of called friction. Climate, obviously, the worse the climate is, the least far you're going to walk, or how well things are plowed, the less you're going to walk. There is another handout I just kind of wanted to put in here. It's called What Makes Communities Walkable. And it's actually pretty cool, because if you take a look at it, there's a lot of very walkable things in Sylvania. So it's like, oh yeah, we have that. We have a quiet, pleasant Main Street, check. We've got great neighborhoods, check. And so as you go down through these, you're like, there are a lot of things that make this community walkable. One thing that's important, though, that they say the town is designed for people. A walkable community is a town designed for people. And that means you think first of the person and the pedestrian, and then second of the car. So don't forget about putting that the pedestrian, the parking environment is also about the pedestrian environment. And that's what I'm trying to, it's not just about getting your car there, it's about walking from that space to wherever you want to go. So just kind of a few little tidbits about that. I also included a shared parking handout that talks a little bit about optimizing parking. And that's this little guy, looks like this. And one of the things about parking, there's a highlighted on the first page, it says 100 employees or residents can usually share 60 to 80 parking spaces without a problem. If you were parking those 100 employees off, not in a shared use, you would need 100 parking spaces. So the ability to do more with less is really the key to shared parking. Also allows you to get parking closer up to where people want it. Then it's more vibrant, and more people are taking responsibility for the parking as well. So parking districts and how parking is paid for, you're kind of spreading the cost in some cases. There is a little chart on the back of this. It's called acceptable walking distance, and you'll start to see very common metrics. This goes back to this 5-minute walking radius. The medium category says less than 1,200 feet to go to general retail, which some of your downtown has, to restaurants, for employees, it's not uncommon or too far for employees to walk 1,200 feet, to entertainment centers and religious institutions that just happen to be on there. So you'll see again and again that 1,200 feet, which, you know, gets you over to here, is kind of used as a common metric for people willing to walk to a destination. There are just kind of some basic kind of geographic considerations or priorities when you're thinking about parking. You guys know these too. So barrier-free parking spaces, of course, are the highest priority, and you want to make sure that your those mobility issues and that people with tickets have really legitimate routes that are well marked and minimize having to walk over, you know, through aisles and through alleys and stuff like that. So that's number one. I mean, in terms of close to the destination. And then your customers and your visitors, of course, that especially for short visits, you want them next closest because they're in and out. So that makes sense. And plus, it's your business, so you want to make sure that you're making your customers happy. But it is okay, especially with restaurants, you know, in the districts where you have a lot of restaurants, you know you're going to have peak time. So it's okay to have overflow as long as it's safe and well marked. right? And so you can have overflow kind of parking. Employees can totally park further away because they're there and they're there all day. There's a Whole Foods in a kind of strip mall in Ann Arbor where there's not enough parking, and it's in a kind of strip mall center, not enough parking that employees park. Like three, maybe they park at least 3/4 of a mile away in a bank parking lot, and then they either walk over or they go, you know, they, and I don't know how they don't even run across the street. It's not very convenient for them, but they do it so that the Whole Foods customers have access to it.
Cheryl, how do they get them to do that? I mean, how do they know?
How did that? Well, in this case, Whole Foods got them to do it. The business said, we need our customers to be right up front. Our customers have been complaining because there's not enough parking in this parking lot. And so we want you guys to move back. And it was a business, it was the owner who said this is good business. Okay. And now they do it as a matter of course, and nobody thinks anything of it.
There's no enforcement issues, I mean.
It's voluntary. In this case, it's voluntary, and they came to an agreement with the bank, so the bank had excess parking spaces. And hospitals do this also all the time. I mean, you're probably familiar with all the, you know, hospitals have such a huge demand, parking demand, and so they'll come to an agreement with parking owners who aren't using all the parking spaces, and then they shuttle back and forth. It's voluntary because it's good for it's their business. They want their patients and families to be able to park. Employees. Okay, residents, and this is maybe not a particular challenge in the downtown right now, but they also have their own kind of needs. If they're living right downtown in a more urban environment, you like to at least have some sort of covered parking for them. And not necessarily a whole lot of parking, but at least a space or two, one space that's covered. So that tends to be a little bit closer proximity, especially if it's homeowner-occupied rentals are probably a little bit more flexible. What are other similar-sized communities doing to address parking? Okay, so everybody does different things. I mean, there's not like one magic. If you do these five things in Sylvania, you're going to be good forever. What you've been doing, which is talking to the businesses, looking at what your needs are, and addressing them to the best of your ability. I apologize because you guys are all in Michigan, so forgive me for that. Tecumseh, that's pretty close to you guys. So municipal lots, they invested about 10 years ago in redoing several of their municipal lots so that they're easily accessible, they're well-lit, they're, you know, landscapes, they don't charge for them. And they're on either side of the boulevard. They have on-street parking on the boulevard, and they do not, also, they don't have meters for that as well. Dexter, Michigan, similar size. Again, municipal lots. They've done kind of an improvement program in the past 5 years to take the lots that they have and try to optimize what they have. They have increased their capacity on some of their side streets with some angled parking. So they had some kind of transition between business and residential neighborhoods, and to some angled parking and on both sides of the street, which has been very helpful for them. Dexter is a booming, hopping little town. No deck. They don't need a deck. Maybe eventually they will, but they don't. Petoskey, big destination for large part of northern Michigan. They have several municipal lots, probably about five times the downtown size, I would say. No parking lots or parking decks. They've done it all with metered parking. They do charge on the street, and they charge in their city lots as well. But they don't have a parking deck. Plymouth, Michigan, was a sleepy little town 20 years ago, and didn't really have much of anything happen in there, a couple little craft shops. They very purposefully looked to increase their density with both residential and more restaurants, and they have on-street parking. They actually built, chose to, probably 10 years now, chose to build a deck essentially, if the urban kind of block form were somewhere, they chose to build a deck essentially right here with access right down to their main street. Have continued to grow since then. Plymouth is kind of a destination, so the demographics are quite a bit different because they're normal. Well, maybe not that different, but there are a lot of people living very close to Plymouth, so there's a lot of people coming in and out of Plymouth on a regular basis. There are some resources that I would recommend that as you continue that you would look at. National Parking Association actually has government memberships available if you're interested in kind of getting tied into an organization to help you understand and help you work towards your parking plan. I did bring, and I just brought one copy, and I'll leave them for Bill. There's this parking management plan checklist that just kind of goes through once you do have a plan, and particularly as it relates to management, some of the things that you could do. And then this other resource is actually smart growth policies, parking policies for the San Francisco Bay Area. It sounds ginormous, but it's actually nice because it's the whole Bay Area, so it's split up into big city centers and then urban centers and then small communities. And again, it helps you understand what some of the tools are related to parking management. And then helps you kind of go, you know, when might we be ready for some of these. Let's see. Then, on the last page, then, we have implementation ideas. And kind of split that into, again, like I said, this is opportunities that seem to have come up both at the parking level in 2008 and it's still valid now. So the first thing, the bulk to what we're saying is these are kind of low-hanging fruit, is to optimize the parking that you have right now. So there are physical modifications, restriping, reconfiguring, modest expansions that would improve capacity and improve the experience of the parking lot. There was a, you know, back in 2008, and as part of the report, there's an improvement plan in the back of the report that talks about what you could do here to get sidewalks on either side to maybe improve connections to the west, restriping, lighting improvements, and things like that could happen there. They could also happen, you know, in the east lot as well, even though that's not municipal. The second bullet on short term is improve the priority pedestrian connection. So if you're going to put more, the point here is back to that, you're going to increase your parking, also increase and improve your pedestrian connection so that you're getting your visitors from one point to another. Management methods. So look at what management methods and time restrictions you have right now. Are they working? Are they not working? If they're not being enforced and they need to be, let's look at how they could be enforced. If they need to be different, maybe they're too short, they need to be a little longer because of the mix of what businesses that you have right downtown, then start to explore that. We talked already about shifting employees away from the Main Street core. So we would say start with voluntary, you know, talking to the businesses and see if they're willing to do that. That would be the most cost-effective way to move forward. It could be managed with more time restrictions if you needed to, or with a permitting system. But I realize if you go to a permitting system, that limits, once you have an employee permit lot, that's not a shared lot anymore. I mean, you could open it up in the evening, but there's some impacts, and then somebody has to manage it, so there's some cost impact to that. Ann Arbor has a policy now. They just started putting parking signs in their public lots that there's no parking allowed until 10 a.m. And that's to keep all the office workers from parking there. Then after 10 a.m., anybody can park there. But it allows the visitors and the customers to come in and park there, and they're the primo spots. And then if nobody's there, then somebody else is allowed to use that space. Just a suggestion and an idea of how you can start to manage some of those real important parking spaces a little bit better. And then this was something that actually was in the report from 08, but the municipal lots that you have, keep them for, maximize their use for your customers. And so if you have government cars or anything else that doesn't need to be there, move your dumpster. If you're losing a few parking spaces because of your dumpster, move that so that it's as far away, you know, still useful, but as far away as possible. Again, all with the focus of trying to get your, you know, your high priority parking spaces as close to your business as possible. Okay, strengthen off-street parking standards. So, you know, it's one thing you have control over in your municipal lot. You don't have the same kind of ability to influence parking in private property. Well, you do have a zoning code, though, and your zoning code can start to encourage or incentivize shared parking, combined parking, drive approaches, so that as things develop over time, you're going to get more efficiency out of those parking lots. And then the fifth one is, you know, the conversation about a deck comes up, and I think it's important now to look at developing and adopting a policy or a financial model or a conversation, maybe some milestones to understand what are the important trigger points. If we do grow to X number, what's our plan? Let's talk about what our plan is, so that 5 years from now you can assess that, but you could be looking at it from, hey, this is what we talked about, so does it make sense now? Because a parking deck is very expensive, it has all sorts of challenges to it, and you don't necessarily want to be making that decision without pre-conversation about it. And if you don't have a conversation about it, then a few years from now you're going to be having this exact same thing. Do we need a parking deck now? Do not need a parking deck now. So just a recommendation. Medium-term opportunities. This is the ability to turn this into a municipal lot, even if it's not owned by the city, but functions as a municipal lot, maybe it's maintained by, but serves as a public parking lot, really, really very valuable, just as this one is. This one is very valuable too, and very visible. This is the one I always go to because I pop in here and I'm like, oh, this looks like a public parking lot. So people always think it is. So revisit that. I know there's public and there's private ownership collaboration that would need to be worked through. So it could be a good time to start to revisit that. Continue to look at the pedestrian connections. Explore the need for expanded management strategies. So if these voluntary restrictions and some of these improvements that you've made in short term continue to maybe not do the trick, then start to look at more stringent management strategies like pay for parking, parking districts, some of those kind of methods. And then long term, install on-street parking along Main Street from Maplewood to Erie. This section through here, you know, it was discussed that there's a desire to actually have that feel more like downtown, to function more like downtown, and to bring those business owners in. So you could put on-street parking there. There's utility implications to that, but to expand your Main Street feel and make it more walkable and on-street parking is something that I think we've given some rough costs in the past 2 years or so to administration. So that's something that could be explored. Alley opportunities in the Northeast District, which is through here, the connection and the kind of consolidation of private parking on those two sides, two blocks, is something that is a long-term thing, but could again be worked towards. And then add, eventually, if you need to, add significant parking capacity, which would really be, there's only so much surface area you have here, and you don't want to diminish the value and the fabric of your downtown by putting too much surface parking in. That's why we're suggesting you take, you know, you do what you have, you optimize what you have, but then eventually, again, look at if you need the capacity to look at putting a parking deck in. You know that studies show a variety of possible locations, including down in Somo, including this area that would serve a wide variety of people, and could potentially have it over here. Well, it could be a private developer, actually, if you were going to look at it on that side. So it probably went by my past my 20 minutes.
Well, you did, but it was a master class in parking, so. Any questions for Sheriff?
I've got a couple, if that's all right.
Okay, sure.
Your original parking study really saw the railroad tracks as a boundary to the downtown business. But we're talking about trying to expand to the west side of the tracks. Do you have any resources you could go to talk about railroad tracks as boundaries and how to overcome that? We have a fairly uncomfortable walkway over the railroad tracks right now. It's just a high asphalt path that you can fall off of. We're going to look into getting another possibility. But are there any studies or design recommendations to overcome don't cross a railroad track?
Well, that is a really good question. And our experience with working with railroad companies is, one is if you can even get them to talk about design, you're way ahead of everybody else. Is they won't answer their phone. They're not particularly interested in having any conversation with anybody because they don't need to. So the good news about this railroad track is it's not heavily used and it's not supposed to be a high-speed rail. So because any of the tracks happening in the Midwest right now that have any possibility of being high-speed or commuter, the rail companies are not allowing any pedestrian crossings on the period. They just say they're not happy. You know, our recommendation is typically they listen politically first. Like if I were to contact them, they would like to deal. So the mayor would need to talk to them or your state rep would need to talk to them. That's really how we have seen the pressure put on them to get them to answer the phone. So that would be my first suggestion. If you're not successful in getting either approval to revise or change the walk, we would also suggest do what you can on either side of it. Because you could, and like your tracks out there now, you do have a sidewalk out there. It's not the greatest thing, but you don't have much that goes kind of to it on either side. So there are ways that you could, you know, if you wanted to make it more visible by putting columns up or, you know, wanted to draw people into that spot, you could take the ownership that you have and do what you can on either side of it and kind of do a workaround. I would say moving it would be nice if you could move it, but it's always easier. It's like a curb cut. If you have something there already, it's easier to keep it there, I mean, in terms of the rail company's opinions. So we don't have any silver bullets in terms of that, Mayor, but that's our experience.
We have a walkway now. Do we have an easement or some sort of agreement with them?
I believe we do. We are billed annually by the railroad company to have that crossing. We also got permission to punch some conduits underneath the railroad right away a few years ago to connect this building to the other buildings electronically. And we're going to pursue that with the railroad company once we get it, but we don't want to upset what we already have. But it might be good to get one that's more centrally located. The one that has right now is right over here. It's almost behind this building, but not quite. It might be better farther to the south. We'll start talking to them, and we will get their attention. We've done that in the past. It takes time, if you recall, getting crossings fixed, but I think we can bring the guts if necessary to get them to talk.
I'd be very interested in seeing the agreement that we have with the railroad company.
We're working on getting that. We'll start with the bill when we get it.
I mean, the fact that you have an easement or agreement is a lot of the battle because, you know, it's not unusual just to have unapproved crossings that have just happened over the years. I know, shocking.
That's because railroad companies don't answer the phone.
Exactly. And so what are you supposed to do?
There's another one down the track a little bit behind St. Joseph Church over to College. I don't know whether that's official or not, but I've walked across that one as well.
Did you have another question, Mr. Mayor?
Just a quickie, and it's in your long-term recommendations to install on-street parking on the north section of all South Main Street. I think the only way to do that is to move the curbs back, is that, yeah.
Yeah.
That actually appeals to me, especially if we could push it back far enough to get diagonal parking or something.
One of the, that was my recollection when we looked at that for you. One of the big constraints is that you've got utility poles running along the Ridge Side, east side. And they would be smack dab in the middle of the way, so they would.
It was a strategy we used a few years ago when we bought the Maplewood Marketplace. We built the parking in front of this building. That was not always here. It was just parallel parking, and it's.
And we have the right of way to do that. We have the right of way to do that.
That's right. Well, I don't know whether we do on North Main or not. I bet we do.
I bet we do.
We do. Yeah, it's pretty, it's.
It may not be popular with the property owners, but it might be very usable parking.
Yeah.
And then just another comment. We've, over the years, had several different engineering studies look at putting diagonal parking in the downtown on one side of the street or the other. That's very effective. Downtown Perrysburg, for instance, has it. But when Mr. Ballmer looked at it, maybe we'll want Mr. Shaw to look at it again, fresh look. We don't pick up more than one or two spaces by doing that. Because you lose the parallel parking on the other side to have enough width to do it. But I like downtowns that have diagonal parking. We just aren't wide enough of the street to do it on both sides.
Right.
Yeah, without making your sidewalks narrower, which you for sure don't want to do.
Not that wide now.
What's that?
They're not very wide now.
Right, right.
We're not Perrysburg, where they've got all that room across there.
Yeah.
That was something that was done in East Toledo, sort of 1900s. They picked up the building and they moved it back 30 feet so they could park a lot of the street there.
Well, there you go.
And well, then we lose it behind you.
That's right.
Any other questions for Cheryl? Cheryl, what I heard is that we've had satisfactory parking, but we're kind of at a tipping point. So even some short-term remedies might be helpful at this point, is that fair to say? I like your suggestion of phasing this, you know, that maybe council needs to address some immediate remedies now and then think about what happens next 2, 3, 4 years out.
Cheryl, do you recall what the investment was about the city of Plymouth with their parking structure?
I don't off the top of my head. I could probably find that out for you, but.
Fair to say it's millions of dollars?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we use for above-grade parking, depending on the quality of above-grade parking decks, could run from $25,000 to $35,000 a space. So if you were to look at a, you know, 400 space deck, you'd have to do the math for me.
I get my deck.
I got it.
All right. Well, Cheryl, thank you so much.
Thank you.
One more question.
Oh.
I'm sorry, Al. You talked about Ann Arbor and not being able to park in their lots till 10 a.m. And that will not work here because we have a new diner going in over here whose business is breakfast business, so I can't use that in the municipal lot. I would really appreciate any resources you can come up with from other communities about workable programs to keep the employees parked away from the businesses. Some sort of cooperative program that we can ask the downtown businesses to buy into and self-police and keep their people back. I think if everybody thinks the next person is going to do it, they may cooperate. But as soon as somebody breaks ranks, everybody will park up close again, which is what's going on now.
So something with a little bit more structure, not just
it
a.
It could be structure. It could be we take half of the lot as it is now, 3 hours, and maybe we make it 2 hours closer. Some sort of structure that I would prefer to be self-policed by the Downtown Business Association. But that the city could step in and issue some parking citations if necessary to get everybody's attention to do it again.
Yeah.
But a self-enforcing program of business owners instructing their employees to park in the more distant spots would go a long way to alleviating our problem for a while.
Well, I would be happy to see if I can find a couple of examples of that for you in a more, sort of a more formal way than, you know, we told you guys to do it, so.
Cheryl, one more question. You know, Todd brought up the parking garage concept or parking deck. I wonder if, how does that impact the community's sense of it being a walkable community? You know, I mean, if you've got a parking garage, does that change people's perception of how they would get from point A to point B in that friendly neighborhood feel of walking the community from point A to point B?
It depends on where you put the parking deck and how well designed it is. And I say that because there's an there would be an impact. Let's say you were going to put a parking deck and you decided that I'm going to put this parking deck right here. So when I come into town, here's this giant parking deck and there's no buildings in front of it. Okay, well, I can get to my parking space really easy, so that's positive. But there's what it's just done to this walkable edge here, it's just eliminated. There's really no reason for you to walk there. There's no shops there. The always the kind of principle is to try to bury your parking structure in and around businesses. So that's why, you know, when we show a circle like this or we show something like this, so that it's lined with businesses on those sides. And then, no, it doesn't. It actually improves your walkability because you're getting people downtown, letting them park, and then walk more around. And then you're also saving other land that used to be, I mean, we often call surface parking lots land banking for development. Because surface parking lot, it could have enough value to sell to a private developer to put up townhomes or to put up lofts or something if they're in the right location. And going, if you want to go to a higher density. And so it allows you to go higher to a higher density, which increases the vibrancy of your downtown. You get more people.
Cheryl.
I had the opportunity to go to Northville, Michigan. They have two parking decks, and they were the most beautiful things I've ever seen. I was very impressed. I had a friend that said, you've got to go to Northville and see the parking deck. They were brick columns, red brick columns. They have green iron gates between each one. They're the first floor deck is probably about a third underground. It's sunk in.
Sure.
And they're lovely. Now, Northville's probably very, very rich community. I don't know if we can compare to that. But I guess for me, I needed to see a good looking parking deck to even think about if that's a possibility. Mm-hmm. And of course, the cost, I'm sure, is prohibitive. But it is possible to have a nice looking parking deck.
You know, I'm going to interrupt this because we have a pretty packed council agenda, and we still want to hear from Mr. Sanford, who is going to kind of give us a ground-level perspective on the parking from some of our downtown stakeholders. I don't know, Bill, if you can do that in 5 minutes or not.
I will surely try, Mark.
If anybody's equal to the task, you are.
I think some of the things I brought up, or that I will bring up, you've already heard mention a different. I gave you in your handout, that was kind of a synopsis of what I heard. I interviewed over 30 people in the last few weeks, and just give you a feel, and I can kind of even get that down to some bullet points too that I'm taking the comments from people. It was a good experience. I learned a lot about different businesses, people's thoughts on things, and then reading the other reports, you could see that there were some consistencies from the past reports to what people now, what has changed. It's a lot of turnover. We got different players. In 2001, I noticed that study was very similar. You had the downtown organization, concerns about parking downtown, and looking at some things. Interesting, the perception that our folks have of downtown is that we have friendly parking. There are certain times that there's capacity issues, but overall they like it, that we don't have parking meters, that we don't have they're not issuing tickets or whatever. And they're, I'd say the majority of people I talk to really do not want to see that because they think it sends the wrong message of welcoming people to the community. Even though we did a lot with improvements with the wayfinding signs, Many people commented about we need more signage, better signs, direct people to where the parking is. And it goes to, and Cheryl touched on this, on the, what I call the east ladder behind Stansley's and JDRM and Key Bank, and is that there's a perception that's a public lot. It's not. It's a public lot, but they're not towing people out or, you know, keeping people from parking there. So I thought that was interesting. Again, if we look at ways to work with, you know, some of the places where people are parking, directing people that are coming from out of town to go. Just about everyone I talked to was talked about the police cars and the dumpsters. There's issues with both of those, but we can talk about that, but you need to know that everybody wanted to know, could we move those items from the municipal lot, which is the lot that's right out right here. The parking deck, I asked everybody I talked to, what do you think about a parking deck? There are some that are very strongly supportive of it. I'd say 4 or 5 definitely really liked it, but the majority of people do not want a parking deck. They're afraid of the cost, they're afraid of it being utilized on a regular basis, and they would rather see us invest, if we're going to invest anything, to improve what we have on the ground level and expand. A lot have been following the stories that have been in the paper about some of the property and different things, and there was definitely support to continue doing that, looking for spots on the ground level where we can expand our parking near the downtown area. Having a pedestrian cut through on the west side of Main Street came up, and that was in past studies too, that there's definitely an interest in doing that. If we could find a way to do that, that would be well received. Back to that east lot to renovate and expand to anything we could do to help that situation over there, that would be well received also. About everybody wanted to talk about that, even though I was primarily talking about the two lots over here, the muni lot and the court lot. You already heard about somehow the connection to that court lot or the west lot. How do we get across the railroad tracks? And that idea of maybe making some greater awareness of where that crossing is now would be one way to deal with that. But more people would use that. The new restaurant that's going to be coming into downtown, he was one of the fellas I talked to, and he made no bones about it. He has 8 employees at his peak times, and he said they're all going to park across the railroad tracks. He's not going to have as low as people to park in. I also found out that a lot of the employers have in their personnel code where their employees are allowed to park in the municipal lot. I thought that was pretty interesting to do that voluntarily. And again, that's where what we need right now is the cooperation of the businesses and where they are asking their employees to park. We're not involved in that right now, and I think that's something that we could probably do a little better job of. And then looking at the customer area right now in that lot, which the municipal lot, there's 36 marked spots that have a 3-hour limit, and I think 6 handicap spots. So those are designated spots, and that's the area that I think we still, you know, is that enough spaces? How do we monitor it? How do we keep that turning over on that 3-hour basis? And that's what I think people would like to see, something improved in that area. That's about it.
Questions for Bill?
Actually, I'm not sure. It's either Bill or Cheryl. The trigger points. I keep thinking about the trigger points. What exactly are we... What are the trigger points that we would be looking for? I mean,
I'll start just something. I think in our discussions, Katie, had been if there was an employer or someone bringing in a large number, let's say 100 jobs that wanted to be in downtown, that would be definitely something that you'd have to look at. But I think there's other things that I've read in some of the other reports based on your square footage of space that you have in your downtown as requirements, and right now it's we're pretty close. It's more future that we have to look at as we bring in more and there's more interest in our downtown, which is a good thing. So I think that we can do some work on that and identify what those points would be.
Yeah, the large employer is a good one, actually, because that's an opportunity, and how a lot of these decks are built when a new business comes in, a big employer comes in, and then you partner with them. So you might end up with a deck that they're using and the city's using as well. And that's how a lot of communities end up paying for helping to pay for the deck. Turner Point is when you've done all of these other things and you've gone, we've done everything that we can to, you know, we've improved this, so we've optimized this parking lot and this parking lot, and we don't want to, you know, continue to, we know people aren't going to park over here. So you can check off of those things, that you've done as much as you can.
The east, the lot on the east side of the street, do people, maybe I'm just too much of a rule follower. I don't generally park there when I come downtown. Is that widely used for public parking? Is that?
And
what I found out, Doug, which is interesting, that from a lot of different folks say that people parking that lot go through the walkway that's by Chandler's and cross the street and go to Revay or one of the new shops over there.
Sure.
So they are using it.
Any other questions for Bill or for Cheryl?
Well, Cheryl, let me ask you this. Okay, one of the recommendations is for the city development is to develop this east lot. Is that to reconfigure it to get more spots, or is it, I mean,
yeah,
if we're already using it, what's our role? How do we best approach that east lot going forward?
I think it's lawful. Well, first, if you reconfigure it, you can get more parking spaces if you handle or work with the drive-through has to be reconfigured as well. So you want to look at the entire, you want to be as holistic as you can about the parking and reconfiguring the parking over here to get as much ownership, you know, in collaboration with those business folks. So that's going to help. The other thing is there's multiple drives. There's like all these little curb cuts. So I could come in here, I could come in here, I could come in here, and then when I come in there, I don't really know if am I allowed to park there. Well, I do, I'm a visitor, and I park there, and I'm never really sure am I supposed to. So that's not a good message to be sending. If this looks like one lot, has fewer curb cuts, it's a better traffic experience and parking experience for your visitors. So there's a lot of benefits in addition to the literal improving the number of.
But that doesn't sound like it would have a large capacity impact.
No, I wouldn't say that's probably true. I mean, it's not, you know, you're not doubling the size of the, there's only so much you can do in that space. Mm-hmm. But by eliminating some of those drive curb cuts, you'd be surprised at how many more parking spaces you can get that are used for driveways.
Yeah, and you know, I guess I'd raise a question about whether the mass public does use it for public parking. I think that's part of the problem. Some people do, some people don't. And so we're losing an opportunity to capture everybody who we could make them understand they could use it, right?
Don't I recall from previous discussions, though, the big issue with that lot is the multiple ownership,
yeah,
which makes negotiations extremely difficult.
It's two now that it wasn't.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just two owners up there.
Yeah, and you know, I had a chance to talk with Mr. Moan a little bit, and the ownership dynamic, you know, is different than when he did a study 8 years ago, right? The some of the property owners are 8 years older. There's some different issues there. So I wouldn't rule out, and obviously this is something for the committee to discuss, but I wouldn't rule out at least revisiting that in some top-line way about what the opportunities are to have a little bit greater control over there.
Well, you know, I think that the Rite Aid's been built since you did your study, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay. Doug, unless you have a final point, I think we should probably move on to our council meeting. I'd like to spend some time at council scheduling the next meeting, which would be for the purpose, I think, of the committee to have some discussion about what we heard tonight and how we might want to proceed. So unless there's anything else, I'll call the committee adjourned at 7:34. Mr. Mayor, what, 3 minutes before we meet?
Let's try five.
Five.